Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And today's topic is a listener suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from a longtime listener, a listener that we write back and forth with all the time.
Yep.
A lot of people will recognize his name, I think, as a matter of fact. It's Rudy Smith.
Hey, Rudy. How's it going?
And Rudy wrote in, it was the beginning of October, I believe, when he wrote in and said, as a Car Stuff listener, I'm interested, but as of yet informed about something that I recently read about, chain drive.
Mm-hmm.
And chain drive, as he says, was common on early cars, and some chain-driven cars were made into, I believe, the 1920s and even into the gangster era. Even expensive cars, not just delivery trucks and things like that, were made using chain drive systems. And he mentions a newer vehicle. He says, you know, seeing the new vehicles like the Polaris Slingshot Roadster makes me wonder if chain drive is maybe making a comeback for cars. Well, I mean, I can quickly answer that last bit and say maybe not. I don't think that chain drive is really making a comeback for cars, but for cycle cars, which we're seeing a few more of those recently in the news, cycle cars are something that have always used chain drive in some way or another. There's a couple of exceptions, mm-hmm. I guess, that are, you know, maybe shaft driven or belt driven. But chain drive is the way that most cycle cars were powered and are powered now. So we're going to dig into the chain drive thing. And I think I'm going to surprise you a little bit on the dates, Rudy, because the 1920s, it goes a lot farther than that. Or even, you know, 1930s, it goes a lot farther than that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of hold off on that information to the very end.
Yeah, give you something to look forward to. We always like to end our podcast with one more thing. That is our largely unsuccessful attempt to get all of our notes into one show, right?
That's right. Yeah, it usually doesn't work.
So one of the first questions would be, if we're talking about chain drive, mm-hmm. one of the first questions would be, why a chain and not a belt?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I guess it would be because belts, you know, back then
mm-hmm.
were nothing more than just leather, you know, riveted together, and it would stretch, it would break. It wasn't as smooth as it could be. I mean, it could be a decent belt, but it wasn't anything like what we're talking about today, where they have carbon fiber belts and belts that were very dependable. Back then, it just wasn't the smart way to go. A better way to go was a metal chain.
Right, and that's spot on, because it goes back to the material science. Before we had some more sophisticated or refined engineering techniques, belts would have a kind of unpredictable lifespan,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people knew they would break, but you didn't know when. And from a car manufacturing standpoint, not even to mention from a car buying standpoint, that's not a good look.
Not to say that you won't see belts on some, you know, large machines.
Sure, sure.
You know, remember those big stationary engines that we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
the kind that, you know, they cycle and there's one big piston that just cycles over and over again. It sounds like thunder when the thing runs. These things were used to run, log mills and all kinds of different farm machinery, right?
Right.
And they would have these enormous leather belts that would run these things. And you'd see them with like a twist in the middle of them. They had kind of I forget what the name of this is. I think I've got a note here about it, the twist in the belt that was designed to allow it to wear evenly on all sides and all the way through. So you will see some of those leather chains or leather belts
mm-hmm.
on a lot of farm machinery and heavy equipment. But chain drive was the way to go for automobiles, no doubt. And the history of this goes way, way, way back, farther than you might think. The roller chain was supposedly invented in about 1880, but it goes farther back than that.
Sure. Yeah. Take us all the way back.
All right. I'll take us back to the 16th century. How about that?
Oh, I think I know where you're headed with this one, Scott.
I bet you do. Someone we've talked about many times on this podcast.
Yeah. The Henry Ford of his day, ladies and gentlemen, Leonardo da Vinci.
That's right.
He's like a Car Stuff reoccurring character now.
He definitely is, because of all his sketches. Now, he didn't necessarily build all these things.
Right.
In fact, he built very few of these, unless it was a scale model or something just so outlandishly big that it wasn't practical, really, because, you know, the technology at the time, I guess. But his sketches, he sketched a roller chain, but it's very similar to the, if not exactly the same, as the chain that Hans Reinold invented, supposedly, or patented, in the 1880s.
And a point of order for everybody who's saying, oh, guys, that's not completely right. Chain drive applications were present before Leonardo da Vinci. Yes, that is true. However, we're talking specifically about a chain drive for what would later become a vehicle.
That's right, because it's a roller chain.
Mm-hmm.
And a roller chain is different from the bicycle chain that you might think of. You know, the bicycle chain doesn't have the roller part of part of the design to it. I mean, it has the pins and it has the plates on the sides, but roller chain specifically has rollers that are meant for longevity. You know, they don't wear out. They're typically a much heavier duty chain. There's also a different type of chain called a Morse chain.
Mm-hmm.
And a Morse chain was invented by the Morse Chain Company of Ithaca, New York. I don't know when exactly it was invented, but it has inverted teeth. And you can check out some of these Morse chains and roller chains and bicycle chains online if you want to see the design differences between them, the very specifics. But let's kind of move on to different things here, because you mentioned powering a vehicle, right?
Yes.
Typically, we think of bicycles, motorcycles, motorcycles mainly, I guess. And motorcycles have three choices.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycles have chain drive, they have belt drive, or drive shaft drive. Now, and then there's kind of an oddball variation. If you want to look up Harley-Davidson Servicar chain drive
mm-hmm.
for a variation on a differential powered by a chain, at least that's kind of what I think is what's happening there. It's a very strange configuration that Harley-Davidson came up with. And I think it was somewhere around 1932 till about 1973 when they produced this vehicle. And it was a three-wheeled utility motorcycle that was built, again, by Harley-Davidson. And has this strange-looking differential with a hole cut out in the middle of it. And then the drive chain goes through the differential. It's a bizarre design, different than any other thing that I've seen.
Yeah, it's unique.
I think it is. And there's a lot of other machinery and things that are powered by these, before we get to cars even.
Sure.
I mean, industrial and agricultural machinery. There's also conveyors, as you mentioned, right?
Right. Yeah. Like an automotive assembly plant will use a chain drive to move components from one part of the factory to the other.
Yep. Even printing presses.
Mm-hmm.
James Watt's steam engine
yep.
was another one. I mean, that design used chain drive to transfer power from the piston to the rocker beam and, from the beam back to the vacuum pump. So for both the upstroke and the downstroke, this thing was using chain drive.
And that was in 1763.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so early, much earlier than the 1880 patent on the roller chain.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, here's a cool one, chain drive wristwatches, which are extremely expensive. But take a look online for a chain drive wristwatch, and it'll blow you away how cool this thing is. It's really neat.
The price tag also will blow you away.
Yeah, yes, it will. And, I saw a video of a 1929 Mack AK chain drive dump truck, which is like this big mining quarry truck.
Mm-hmm.
That was chain drive. I mean, but you can imagine the size of the chain on this thing. It's huge.
Right.
From the 1920s, gigantic machine. Engines, of course, we mentioned that modern cars still use a timing chain to drive the camshaft, the timing purposes. It's not necessarily chain drive in the modern case, but a chain is still part of that whole equation. We mentioned bicycles. There's
yep.
the safety bicycle, which was the first use of the chain on bicycles.
Right. Yeah. Before that, when we say safety bicycle, you should go ahead and picture the modern bicycle, because before that, there was a thing called the penny farthing, which was a direct drive. That's the one with the really big wheel in the front and the tiny steering wheel in the back. And the pedals were just at the hub of the big wheel. So you weren't getting the same operation that a chain drive gives you. And interestingly enough, I know we were just supposed to research chain drive, but I went kind of deep into bicycles.
Okay.
Before the penny farthing, there was this thing called the bone shaker. Have you seen this?
No, I have not.
I think the name is the bone shaker. It's called the bone shaker, by everybody who had ever tried to ride it, but it originally was known as the Velocipede. That's what the company who manufactured it called it.
Okay.
This was also a direct drive. It was built out of like cast iron or something. It was heavy metal, and the only wooden thing on it were the wheels, but it was so unpleasant to ride that they all called it the bone shaker.
And likely on cobblestone roads,
yep.
things like that. Oh my gosh, that would have been miserable to ride.
Right. Yeah. And these are, at this time, these are like handmade tires and wheels. So, they're not completely perfect. They're uneven too. You've got to check out the pictures and see these. But anyhow, forgive my aside on the history of bicycles, the point being that the chain drive is not as strange or foreign as it may sound to most people, because anytime you have seen a modern bicycle, you have seen a chain drive at work, and they do a great job.
Exactly right. That's why they stuck with that design for a long, long time. Now, I do want to say that, you know, they typically, nearly all motorcycles and bicycles use rear-wheel drive, either by drive shaft,
yep.
which is an odd thing, again, I mentioned, chain or belt. And since the front wheel is turned with steering, it would be really difficult or, you know, kind of cumbersome, I guess, to kind of have to bend the drive mechanism around the turn of the front wheel. So that's the reason that most bicycles are rear-wheel drive when you think about, you know, that long chain. What's the point of that? The idea is, that, you know, because you turn the front wheels, it just can't happen that way. Now, an exception, I guess, would be the recumbent bicycles. There's a certain type of recumbent bicycle with it says it has the moving bottom bracket type of recumbent bicycle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So recumbent bicycles are kind of weird anyway. I don't understand why somebody would want to lay down on the road.
I guess it's so strange. I mean, but the entire drivetrain on those, including the pedals and the chain, pivot along with the front steering wheel, and that's why that particular
design works.
That's the only reason that works. Now, there's also transfer cases and modern transfer cases I'm talking about. So
okay.
If you have a typically, you know, an all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive vehicle, your transfer case is loaded with chains inside. And there's these big, wide, very, very heavy-duty chains, as you can imagine. But take a look for an exploded view of a transfer case. If you've never seen inside one, it's pretty fascinating to see what's going on in there.
Yeah, and there's a YouTube video, actually there are several, where you can check out a cutaway in real life, and
sure.
I think those are instructive. You and I sometimes go through these phases where we just, I assume you do it too, but I know you've seen me do it at my desk, where I'm just watching videos of engines by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there are thousands of videos on YouTube where somebody puts an engine on a post and says, here we go, I'm running it, and you get to watch the engine work, and then sometimes they'll also take the engine apart and disassemble it. And I think if you want to learn more about transfer cases, that's one of the best ways to look it up. One thing we should point out about motorcycles and the chain drive there is that motorcycles need these chains because they are operating, you know, from a usage standpoint, they're always operating under very tough conditions, right? Contaminants everywhere, rain, dirt, sand, lots of shocks. So a belt just doesn't make as much sense.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, some have gone to that way. They've gone to the belt drive, but that's only because belt technology has gotten so much better recently. Because,
absolutely.
As I mentioned, carbon fiber. Now, they're starting to create these carbon fiber reinforced belts that are driving motorcycles. You know, in the past, we mentioned that they were leather and they were, you know, basically riveted together.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that didn't hold up too well. But, you know, there are round belts, there are V-belts, multi-groove belts, there's rib belts, film belts, there's all kinds of specialty belts. You know, there's even, you know, when you're talking about belts, think about this. You know the rolling roads that we see that where they test F1 cars?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, some of the big F1 teams have rolling roads where they can actually place a car on the rolling road and see how it reacts on the surface of the road. That surface that it's traveling on is a giant belt, if you want to think about it that way. So that's another.
Yeah,
that's like the belt driving the car, really, is the way it goes.
That's kind of
meta. Because they drive the belt, right?
Okay, so we have established, I think, the benefits of a chain drive, right? And a little bit of the history and a little bit about how it works. So now let's get to the meat of it, and let's talk about those automobiles that Rudy asked us about in his original email.
All right, well, as you might have guessed, you know, chain drive was a popular way of transmitting power, you know, in the earliest days of the automobile, from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It was an alternative to what they called the system panhard. And you got to think about it this way. The system panhard was considered like a rigid Hotchkiss drive shaft and universal joint system. So, you know, it's what we think of in the modern car, really, I guess, in that way that it's a drive shaft system.
Mm-hmm.
And most modern vehicles have drive shaft systems, right?
Yep, that's
well,
true.
Well, chain drive systems were simply competing with the Hotchkiss systems in the early part of the 20th century, and it just so happens that the drive shaft systems are the ones that came out on top in this battle.
Yes, a battle it was, and this happens often in the automotive world. As we know, it's happening today, some could say, between electric cars and ICs.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some of the pros and cons, some of the benefits of the chain drive, which, although it wasn't perfect, there are some stark and inarguable benefits.
That's right. And that's the reason it stuck around for as long as it did. And I can tell you that a chain drive system uses, of course, one or more roller chains to transmit power from a differential to the rear axle. Now, the good thing about this is it allows for a great deal of vertical axle movement. For example, like if you're going over a really bumpy road and you know that, you know, early roads were not good at all. They were extremely bumpy, you know, rutted from wagon use even, as a matter of fact, in a lot of cases. It was a lot simpler design than to build a rigid drive shaft in a workable suspension at that time. It was just an easier way to handle this.
Right, yeah, and let us remember that this design principle is something that I don't think will ever change. Simpler is better. Also, there is less unsprung weight at the rear wheels in a chain drive car. I mean, as opposed to the Hotchkiss drive.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the Hotchkiss drive system also has the weight of the drive shaft and the differential to carry as well. So, you know, it just meant that you're carrying a lot more weight. It was just an ineffective way to do it compared to the chain drive system at the time. It just didn't meet the needs of the people, you know, of the vehicles at the time. And this meant that the chain drive vehicles would have a much smoother ride because they had, you know, this lighter unsprung mass, and it would allow the suspension to react over bumps a lot more effectively and independently, really.
So with those applications in cars, right, we see some clear benefits to chain drive systems, especially at that time. Now we can talk about one of the things I was really looking forward to in this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Archibald Fraser Nash, who founded the Fraser Nash Company in 1922 to build cars, he partnered up with a group called the GN Cycle Car Company.
Yeah, the GN Cycle Car Company. They were building a lightweight, this is a four-wheel vehicle. It wasn't a three-wheel vehicle,
right,
but it was called a cycle car. And it was a two-cylinder car. It was built from 1911 till about 1922, as you mentioned. In 22, they merged with Nash, Fraser Nash, and it was a popular car. I mean, people were buying them because it was a lightweight way to get around town, very inexpensive. So Archibald Fraser Nash, as you mentioned, Ben, and Henry Ronald Godfrey, who was the owner or CEO or whatever.
Yeah, founder of GN Cycle Car.
Founder, that's a better way to say it. Yeah, the GN Cycle Car Company. They get together and they design a better vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they designed the famous Fraser Nash chain drive system. And Scott, you and I were looking at a picture of this earlier before we went on the air.
Yeah.
What's weird about this system is that it uses one chain per gear, and it selects these gears using dog clutches. And this all translates into the engine being able to make extremely quick gear selections. Mm-hmm. But If you look at it, Scott, could you describe the cutaway there? How many chains are we talking?
Well, you know, it looks like on this one that I've got here, there are four chains. Now, I believe, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think they went up another gear even. So, this might be an example of a three-speed car with a reverse gear because the reverse gear had its own chain.
Yeah.
So I think the one I'm looking at is a three-speed with reverse. And I think they also went up to a four-speed with reverse. That would mean five chains that go basically from the middle of the vehicle back to the rear axle. And you may say, well, why to the middle of the vehicle? Because you think it would go all the way to the front, right?
Right.
Well, it actually had a you know, as we mentioned, a transmission and everything. It's chain drive, of course. But there's a drive shaft that goes from the engine back to this, I guess it'd be almost like a bevel gear, really. I think. And that,
yeah,
you know, is that the way it's working on this one? Because the Nash is a little bit different. I'm looking at this cutaway and it's slightly different than what I've got because there's kind of a basic setup for a typical chain drive vehicle. And I can kind of walk you through it, but you almost have to look at one to understand what I'm talking about.
So, yeah, let's walk through it.
All right, so think about the front of the vehicle. There's the engine. There's a transmission. You know, you got the shifter on top of the transmission just as you normally would, right?
Yeah.
There's a drive shaft just as you normally would have. But that goes back to what's called a bevel gear. Now, a bevel gear is what is essentially inside of the differential, and it's used to transmit power to two different, you know, like two spinning axles. At different speeds.
Right,
That's the way it works. So think about it like a cornering vehicle. You know, that's the way that rear differentials work, right? It allows the two wheels to spin at different speeds, and it's okay. It doesn't hop around like, you know, when you put a transfer case into four-wheel low on a Jeep or something like that. You can't make a sharp turn without the vehicle hopping.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what would happen if you didn't have this bevel gear, this differential setup, you know, this limited slip differentials, you know, all that stuff is, that's all playing into the way this whole thing works. Now, from that bevel gear, that there's a sprocket, and the sprocket then turns a, you know, it spins along with the bevel gear and the drive shaft, and there's a chain that attaches back to, the rear wheel. Now, the rear wheel looks a lot like a bicycle tire or a motorcycle tire, if you want to think about it that way. That's probably a better way to
describe motorcycle, it.
Yeah, motorcycle. With, you know, everybody can picture that with the sprocket on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that bevel gear with the chain is driving the rear wheel. And that's the basic setup for almost all of these cars. However, I want to say that this this Fraser Nash vehicle looks quite a bit different in the way that it's set up with these four chains going to the back end.
Yeah, that's true, and this might be one of those things where you have to see it to believe it.
I think so, but I mean, they really had a pretty good claim to fame with this design. Now, they built these cars from what, about the 1930 to 1939, I believe.
Yeah,
were the chain drive models, right? And they actually called them the Chain Gang vehicles, which I think is kind of a cool name, right?
Right. Yeah, and they produced about 400 of them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we should point out, Scott, lest we be remiss, is that these cars were fantastic for racing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this Fraser Nash transmission system became the basis, the DNA for a lot of the special racing cars of the 20s and 30s. One of the most famous of those being Basil Davenport's Spider. Basil Davenport is just such a 1920s name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And imagine him in his Fraser Nash on the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
I can just picture that.
He set the record using this transmission system at the Shelsley Walsh Speed Hill Climb in the 20s. And as we said, over the course of between like mid-20s to 1939, the company produced 400 chain drive models. But that was after, you know, they went broke for a little bit.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is when they describe these vehicles, Ben, when they say, you know, the way these Chain Gang Fraser Nash cars were built, they call them very crude, but they were lightweight and they offered performance that was equal to, you know, vehicles that were a lot more expensive in that day. You know, sports cars. It was competing with major league sports cars of the day.
Yeah. And they were saying you get a lot of bang for your buck with this.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, just to trace the path of this company for a while, when they return out of bankruptcy or receivership, as it was called then, and they are AFN Limited, and they get involved with Porsche, right, and become the official importer for Great Britain, and then they also eventually start working on gun turrets. Hydraulic gun turrets.
Strange, isn't it? I guess, you know, times of war, people do what they have to do, right? They adapt. We talked about Tucker building gun turrets as well, right?
Yeah, we did.
That was kind of a strange mix, I think. But this is the first time I've heard another automobile company doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And they continued doing work for a long time after that in various other applications, active with BMW, things like that. But they're not the only chain drive cars we're here to talk about today.
No, there are a couple of others. And, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Morgan three-wheelers.
Oh, yeah.
The original Morgan three-wheelers. Uh-huh. Because, you know, the originals, you know, the ones that go way back, they were chain drive. They were from, you know, from the gearbox to the rear wheel, the kind of system that I mentioned earlier, you know, with the bevel gear in between. So it was like, you know, transmission, drive shaft, bevel gear, chain all the way back to the back end.
Right.
And that's how those were set up. Now, the modern version, the newer Morgan three-wheelers, the ones you can buy right now online if you want to, those have a rubber drive belt that's fitted to the rear wheel. So a similar design, but they're using the modern material because, you know, it's a lot more reliable, I guess. You know, it doesn't, you know, stretch and break.
Right.
It is a, I believe this is another example of a carbon fiber reinforced belt, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they would do it any other way, really, at this point. But people say that it's, you know, a relatively quiet operation. It's not, you know, like it's going to be clacking around and making a lot of noise. Because I would assume that those Fraser Nash cars that we mentioned earlier, they were probably pretty loud when they were at
speed.
Oh,
yeah. Are you kidding?
Imagine going 90 miles per hour in a vehicle with, you know, four chains attached to the rear axle. It's got to be making a lot of noise.
Now, I don't think that they used the silent chain or the inverted tooth drive.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah, no, that would be like the only way.
Nope. Now, you know, I think we're getting to the point here where I've got a few more things to include here. I want to talk about the modern vehicles that use chain drive or belt drive.
Sure, sure.
As Rudy had requested. But there's one last thing that I kind of want to hang on to here, which would be the last popular chain drive automobile. And we'll wait to the very end to mention that, because I think that will raise some eyebrows.
You got it. So let's start with some chain drive vehicles in the modern day. My contribution will be the T-Rex.
Oh, very good. Yep, that's a cycle car, right?
Yep, three wheels. Love it.
Looks an awful lot like a motorcycle. You know, big motorcycle, right?
That's true, that's true.
But it's, but you drive it like a car,
yeah,
right? So it's definitely a chain drive car, right?
Mm.
I think it's kind of one of those fuzzy areas, right? I mean, isn't it? It's a cycle car. It's probably insured as a motorcycle.
Yeah, but it's such a gray area because it's also enclosed.
Well, we're talking about, like, you know, the Morgans, and we're talking about some of the other cycle cars. And the three-wheel vehicles, of course, most of those are chain-driven vehicles. Now, you said the T-Rex. Ace cycle cars from Liberty Motors,
yep.
Those are actually shaft-driven.
What?
Yeah, it's got an unusual shaft drive setup.
How did I not know that?
It's just a weird set. I mean, you have to look at it to completely understand it. And there are some, you know, modern bicycles that are that way. It's a similar thing, only much stronger, of course, for an automobile.
Right.
So a lot of people would think that the cycle car or the Ace cycle car would be that way. But it's a shaft drive. All right. Then there's also, as Rudy mentioned, the Polaris, Slingshot. That's a tough one to say. Now, that's a three-wheel vehicle, right? It's like a motorcycle, but with two bucket seats. It has a steering wheel. So again, you ride a bike, you drive
a car,
a cycle car, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the way, or a three wheeler, I guess, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Now Polaris is typically known for making like recreational vehicles, ATVs, watercraft, some snowmobiles, of course, they made those. And they have a very similar, actually they have the exact same design that I mentioned before with, you know, the engine, trans, drive shaft, bevel gear, and then rear wheel with the chain in between the bevel gear and the rear wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the Polaris Slingshot works. So, I don't think that there's going to be a dramatic comeback for this design. It's just, it happens to work for these three wheel vehicles. So whenever you see a three wheel vehicle, there's probably a good chance, that it's going to have a chain drive versus, it could have belt drive. That'd be easy, but
sure.
Versus a drive shaft drive system.
Yeah, so I would say then, however, the idea of a resurgence in popularity for chain drives really goes back to whether or not three-wheeled vehicles are going to become the next big thing. Because let's be honest, in a lot of places right now, these cycle cars are seen as novelties.
Mm-hmm.
They're not seen as a great daily driver. And every time we do a show on one of these, because we've covered at least four or five different companies doing a three-wheel design.
Sure.
Whether Delta or Tadpole or whatever. One thing that we found is that they're being designed for specific purposes and uses, but they haven't quite caught on yet. You know, like a cycle car would be great for a city.
It definitely would. Yeah, I think it would. I mean, there's definitely a time and a place for these things. I mean, the time, maybe now, as long as they do it the right way.
Right.
The place for them, you know, that could be, you know, on the track. It could be, just a weekend vehicle. It could be a commuter vehicle, as a, like a city car, just something that gets extremely good mileage back and forth to and from the office, you know.
Sure.
Back and forth between home.
The grocery store, office, home kind of driving.
School, wherever you're going. Yeah. I mean, because it gets motorcycle like miles per gallon, but the comfort of being able to sit down and actually drive it with the steering wheel and not have to balance it at every stoplight, right?
Yeah, I'm just a huge fan of three-wheel cars, and I wish that I could. I wish that I were in a situation where one of those would work for me.
Yeah,
I would not look back.
Some of these, you know, they're weekend toys. Clearly, some of them are not really affordable if you're just going to use it as a commuter car every day type thing, right?
Yeah, and another factor with three-wheeled vehicles is that they're not really family cars. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Typically two-seaters, very small, usually open, right? Usually open.
Yeah. Top. I mean, there are enclosed options, though.
Yeah, there have been a few.
Yeah. But let's go directly to one last thing.
One more thing.
All right, Ben. So this is going to surprise you, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
Probably been studying this anyways, but I think it will surprise Rudy and it may surprise a lot of other listeners. The last popular chain drive automobile was the Honda S600 made in the 1960s.
Yep, that is right. We found this in the course of our research, and it was almost one of those too good to be true things, because while chain drives were largely on the fringes of auto manufacturing, after, I would say, the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you said, they kind of had a VHS Betamax thing going on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I dated us so hard with that one. Yeah. But, you know, chain drive was the Betamax. However, reports of the chain drive demise had been exaggerated.
So, Rudy, don't feel bad, because I didn't think the chain drive had existed much longer than the 1930s as well.
We had no idea.
This was a surprise when we found out that cars that were built, now get this, the S600, which is the last, again, popular production vehicle that was built, for the populace, I guess, between 1964 and 1966. So all the way until 1966, Honda was producing a chain drive automobile. And you might think, oh, that's old technology, right? Because, you know, a lot of those microcars that I saw at that microcar museum had chain drive. But that made sense, because a lot of those had almost like lawnmower engines that were powered.
Yeah,
right?
They're definitely small engines.
Very, very small engines, almost like moped engines or something, mm-hmm. that type of drive setup. But to have an actual, you know, a vehicle that you could get in with somebody else and cruise around town in, and, you know, it was a modern vehicle, you know, modern for 1966, that's pretty remarkable. The S600, get this is all information I found about this thing, and I'll kind of run down it pretty quickly, but it's pretty interesting, you know, what I found here. The S600 was the first Honda available in two different trim levels, so that's strange. So prior to 1964, they only offered one trim level for every vehicle that they put out. That was it. It was, that's their model, and that's it.
But you could go up a notch with the S600, huh?
With the S600, you could have two different body styles is what it was.
Yeah.
There was a roadster, and then there was also a fastback body style. Now, this was also the first mass-marketed car by Honda. So the first one they were really putting out there for sale, you know, beyond just like, well, we also make cars and you may be interested in those. they were really pushing this one. And it was first offered only in right-hand drive, but it soon became available in left-hand drive for export markets. You know, obviously they wanted to do that. Now, it is not a motorcycle engine, as you might think it would be, right, with this chain drive system. It's got a different type of chain drive that we're going to talk about. Let's talk about the engine. It was powered by a dual overhead cam, water-cooled, four-cylinder inline engine with four carburetors. So it's not a motorcycle engine by any means.
No.
And it had, it was about 606 cc's, so that's about a half a liter, roughly. I mean, a little bit more. The S500, which is the model prior to this, had a much smaller engine. It had a 531 cc engine, so they really stepped it up for the S600.
I guess, thank you.
That's right. And the engine was also in front, which you might not have guessed. It was a twin cam engine, 57 horsepower at 8,500 RPM.
57 horsepower.
57 horsepower. And did you hear that last part?
Yeah.
8,500. Now, it revs like a motorcycle, right?
I mean, right. Yeah.
That's extremely high revving, but 57 horsepower. It had a top speed of about 90 miles per hour, which is not bad. That's about 140 kilometers per hour for anybody listening across the pond.
Oh, yeah. We're getting better about that.
We're trying to.
Yeah.
Let's see. It also had a four-speed gearbox and the convertible weight, you know, so the Roadster we're talking about, it's about 1,500 pounds, you know, 715 kilograms.
So what do you think happened with the S600? Why did Honda move away from the change?
You know, I'll tell you in just a minute why they probably did it, but I don't know why they didn't stick with it for just a little bit longer, because it was a pretty good system. It was actually rear-wheel drive with a sealed roller chain drive to each rear wheel. So this is an unusual design. You got to think about this. So they actually had shaft drive back to the differential. And then the differential, you know, that's where the axles come off of,
right on each side.
So at the end of each axle, there was a sprocket that drove a chain that then powered the rear wheels. So each wheel acted kind of like its own independent suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a weird design. I mean, it's something completely unusual from everything else that was out there at the time. So they're using two small chains at the very ends of axles that are driven by the drive shaft, really.
Yeah.
So a different variation on the whole thing. It's a different form altogether. And get this, Ben. Now,
okay.
We can guess, or we can speculate why they went away from this design.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was just complexity. Maybe it was just easier for them to manufacture something a little better later, or maybe independent suspension took a major leap forward in 1966 or something like that.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened. But can you guess who owns one of these?
Is it Jay Leno?
It is Jay Leno. I kind of figured you would guess this, but I saw a very clean, very, very nice looking example on a show called My Classic Car. And that's the one with Dennis Gage. He's the host.
Oh, yeah.
And he was visiting Jay in his garage. Mm-hmm. And of course, they do a little bit of a walk around and then a drive in the vehicle. And it's pretty impressive. He has a 1964 Honda S600. And they even talk about the chain drive. They show you a little bit of it, not much. But it's definitely a respectable little car to get around town in.
You know, at this point, I'm surprised when there's a car Jay Leno does not own.
Yeah, I think it's kind of getting that way, isn't it? I mean, it almost seems like, do they bring cars in that he doesn't necessarily own that he just talks about? I mean, there's some episodes where I wonder.
I don't know, man. I get the feeling that he's pretty much a straight shooter car-wise.
But he's just got so much of everything. I mean, the breadth of his collection is incredible. I mean, it's not narrow at all. He doesn't like have one favorite thing. He doesn't have like, I'm interested in only Italian exotics.
Right, or only roadsters. But here's the thing. What I really respect about the guy is that he clearly knows his stuff. He's not somebody just throwing money at someone saying, go get me a car that'll just sit, like I'm the Sultan of Brunei or something, or excuse me, his brother.
Absolutely. Oh, Prince Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry. No, he seems like the kind of guy that was out there with his sleeves rolled up and actually working on the vehicle.
Like he knows how to work his steam powered car. That's impressive.
It really is. I mean, he's definitely a hands on guy. And, when I say that, it seems like he brings things in, I'm just saying it just seems that way because this guy's got a little bit of everything.
He does.
And,
yeah.
And
Cave of Wonders.
It's such a cool thing. I mean, and where is he keeping them all? I mean, they're not all in one building by any means. But again, check out My Classic Car and you can look up, My Classic Car, Honda S600. Mm-hmm. And this episode will come up. It's only half of the episode. So, it's like 10 minutes to watch. It's pretty impressive.
And I'd also like to give a shout out to a website we found called chainguide.com, like chain-guide. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it's spelled. This has an exhaustive list of information about the types of chains that would be used in various applications, and it breaks it down. We didn't dig too deep into some of that stuff, but if you would like to learn more, especially about this, the specific details regarding the construction of chains for motorcycles, for chain drives in autos, and for other applications, this is a place that I think would be a great spot to visit. And Scott, I just realized, what we've done? We've had some of Car Stuff's regular recurring characters all in one podcast. Let's see. We got Leonardo da Vinci.
Yep.
Jay Leno.
Sure.
Rudy.
That's right.
And it's a party when he shows up.
Yeah.
So now let's up the ante a little bit with some Facebook messages.
Sounds good.
All right, Scott, just a few quick ones before we're on our way out here. Carl writes to us and says, have you guys ever explained how OEM companies work? I'm thinking some might be interesting considering the huge airbag recall, but might not understand how that system works. Also, where did the huge companies like AC, Delco, Bendix, Mopar, and others come from?
Interesting. That's a very good one. I mean, a lot of history there.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And find out where they are now because there's a dramatically different landscape for those companies now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Some of them aren't around.
So we'll find. Hey, spoilers, man.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sure everybody knows.
Yeah, but OEM, that sounds like a good bet for a future episode, I think.
Yeah, good call, Carl. Thank
and
you for
my car. My car might be in on that airbag recall, by the way.
You know what? I got the letter, too.
Did you?
Well, I got a letter not for airbags, but for a recall for Chevy. I don't think it was for airbags. I read it and, I thought, oh, is there a chance I can make a little money off this one? And I don't know if
I'm going to class action suit.
Right.
You can make
$1.17
or something.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe we'll have an episode on how recalls work soon. I think we've touched on that maybe in the past. But,
yeah.
If we actually have to do this or we have to deal with it, we'll know a lot more about it soon.
Yeah, that's true. We've got another one. You'll like this one, Scott. Michael Z wrote to us and said, Scott and Ben, just found out about this website, Internet Movie Car Database. You can look up a car and see which movies or TV shows it's been shown on or which cars are in a movie/TV show. I immediately thought of Car Stuff.
I'll let you in on a little secret.
Uh-oh.
Remember when we were doing the Netflix stuff?
Yeah.
I would go to the Internet Movie Car Database and look up all the cars that were in that movie.
That's how you always knew.
And come up with those giant lists. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could watch the movie, but you can't pick out everything because there they have still frames of the vehicles that were in that movie. and a list of what they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes people will argue about which model, which trim level,
sure,
you know, et cetera. So if not all of our listeners know about this, you know, by all means, check it out. It's a really cool site. You can look up, you know, information by make and model. You can look it up by movie. You can kind of, you know, play around with how you search this whole thing, but it is loaded with automobiles.
So check it out and let us know what you think. And hey, while you're on the internet, why not visit carstuffshow.com or, oh, this is our breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. You can also visit YouTube to see the first episode of our newest series on caffeine and exotics.
Yeah, that's right. It came out very recently, and mm-hmm. You can check it out on How Stuff Works YouTube channel.
Right, yeah, youtube.com/HowStuffWorks.
Yep, and our first episode was on Ferrari.
Mm-hmm. Right? Which turned out pretty well. And our super producer, Noel, on the ones and twos over here, makes a surprise appearance.
Yeah, a little cameo at the very end, but you got to hang on to the very last end. Second. Yeah. You know, maybe 3 seconds at the end, but you'll spot a Noel in the wild.
Yeah, worth it. One of the best parts of the video.
And we should say that Noel, you know, he contributed, you know, he's a cameraman for that day.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
Some fantastic footage from mm-hmm. that event. So great job, Noel. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a renaissance man, my friend. We are going to head out and start looking up some OEM stuff. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. And you can write to us directly. We're not highfaluting. We actually write back sometimes.
As much as we can.
As much as we can. And the best place to send your emails is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.